this week on Capitalism, Race, and Democracy.
If the U.S. wasn't funding this genocide, it wouldn't be happening at the scale that it is. The U.S. is guilty.
On the United Nations International Day of Solidarity with Palestine, South African trade unionists call out the U.S. for supporting the Israeli genocide.
It's only the start. The idea that there's only two people criminally responsible is definitely not the case. This needs to go all the way to the tops of the U.S. administration.
Former member of European Parliament from Ireland, Claire Daly, shares her views on the news that the ICC issued arrest warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant.
Now what's been going on has been a sigh of relief by the population because they hated that Prime Minister Gary Conin. Nobody wanted him.
Haiti Action Committee co-founder Pierre Labossière discusses the Transitional Council's removal of Haiti's prime minister.
We have tried and tried with no avail to get a hold of our National Federation of Labor President Liz Shuler. We want her to help the working people in East Palestine, Ohio, to push the legislatures in D.C., the president, to enact the Stafford Act. Liz Shuler, where are you? We're here.
East Palestine residents urge AFL-CIO President Liz Shuler to call on President Biden to institute the Stafford Act so they can get health care and funds to move out of their toxic homes. From Pacifica Radio, this is Capitalism, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from Pacifica stations and affiliates across the U.S. I'm your host, Polina Vasilyev. Thursday, November 29th, was the UN International Day of Solidarity with Palestine. In South Africa, the two main labor federations, Congress of South African Trade Unions, KASATU, and South African Federation of Trade Unions, SAFTU, joined the Palestine Solidarity activists to protest at the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria and at the two consulates in Durban and Cape Town. Here are some voices from the protest in Cape Town.
1, 2, 3, 4!
1, 2, 3, 4!
Occupation no more!
Occupation no more!
The layman can see that if the United States didn't fund this genocide, it wouldn't happen. That after even 1 week of Israeli bombardment, they need to refuel, they need to replenish their stocks. And it is only because the people of America are funding this thing that Israel can continue doing what it is doing. It is time that the people of America wake up and say more, do more than they're doing now in order to say we shall not allow this to be done in our name and then stop the government from funding this genocide.
Well, the bombs that the Israeli aggressors are dropping on Palestinian men, women and children are U.S. bombs, are bombs made primarily in the U.S. And the U.S. has just approved a $20 billion military package to Israel. And another one on top of the enormous amounts of money that they have given to Israel this year. So if the U.S. wasn't funding this genocide, it wouldn't be happening at the scale that it is. The U.S. is guilty.
Those were voices of pro-Palestine protesters speaking out at the U.S. consulate in Cape Town, South Africa, on November 29th. Martin Jansen is a leader of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign in Cape Town, South Africa. He spoke to Pacifica's Steve Zeltzer about the South African labor action for Palestine on November 29th and the role of the U.S. in supporting the genocide of Israel.
This action is initiated by KOSATU, the Trade Union Federation, which we're very pleased about because KOSATU has been relatively weak of late over the past decade, and specifically around Palestine, despite the fact over many, many years, KOSATU has been a loyal, committed supporter of Palestine's liberation. They haven't been as active as we would have liked them to, and fortunately now, albeit very late, they've come in and they've initiated this action at the American Embassy on Friday. So we think it will be the beginning of a revival of actual labor solidarity, which will strengthen the movement even further and also put pressure on our own government, because the government on the one end has initiated action at the International Court of Justice, a case of genocide against Israel. But at the same time, they've done very, very little concretely to, you know, impose punitive measures against the Israeli regime. No sanctions at all. The Israeli ambassador is still here. No political ties have been cut with Israel. South Africa is still exporting coal. I think it's the second biggest exporter of coal to Israel. And yeah, very little has been done. There's another big issue that we've been pushing for many, many years, over a decade, which is there are lots of young Zionist South Africans who actually serve in the Israeli occupation forces. They've brazenly boasted on social media about their activities, even now during the genocide. And they often come home, you know, for a break, you know, in Johannesburg, Cape Town, they visit their families. And we've brought cases against these people since 2014. And up to now, despite self-incriminating evidence, and the fact, you know, we've got a law called the Foreign Military Assistance Act, where it specifies that anyone who wants to serve in a foreign army needs the permission, the consent of the minister. And last year, in fact, was it early this year, we ascertained formally a letter from the relevant Department of Government that not a single person, not a single one of these young Zionists have obtained the necessary permission from the minister. So based on that alone, there's a strong case to be made against them and, you know, prosecution. But the National Prosecuting Authority have actually done nothing up to now to seriously deal with those cases, despite the fact that, you know, there's a genocide, the most brutal genocide that's unfolding. And on the one hand, the government is pursuing a case against Israel for this genocide. And that we find very, very peculiar, very, very strange. And many people are suspicious that our state organs have, in fact, been influenced and to some extent captured by Zionists in South Africa, who are very, very influential, unfortunately.
And what was the relationship of Israel to South Africa during the apartheid regime?
Oh, it was a very, very close relationship. In fact, even in my youth activist days, there were three countries that were kind of international pariahs, depending on who they related to. That was South Africa, apartheid South Africa, Israel, of course, and then Taiwan. Those three countries cooperated with each other for much of the apartheid era. And as I said, they were extremely close. So there's been research done, a number of articles written about that relationship. And Israel apparently provided South Africa with lots of useful scientific information to produce its own atomic bombs, which it did. So both Israel and South Africa had nuclear weapons. That's just one example. But did lots of exchanges about oppressing people. Both regimes were regimes of colonial settlers of European origin. And they supported each other. They exchanged methods of oppression and control.
The AFL-CIO, as you probably know, is silent about the genocide, silent about U.S. military weapons, by the billions, many billions of dollars being sent to Israel for bombing not just Gaza, but for use in the West Bank and now in Lebanon. And one of the organizations that is supporting this genocide is the Histadrut. Why don't you talk about who the Histadrut is and the relationship of the Histadrut to the apartheid regime in South Africa?
Look, the Histadrut is the Israeli trade union formation. It was formed alongside, and in fact, from the beginning of Zionism, it was formed alongside the Zionist movement. It's closely allied, closely attached to the Zionist movement. And what's interesting about not only the Histadrut, but Zionism, well, it had this facade of socialism through the kibbutz movement. The kibbutz movement was seen as, or was operating, you know, along the lines of so-called, I don't know, I suppose, communist or socialist lines, where you had area or village cooperatives where people would live and work together as equals, sharing and building a community. So they had this kind of left-wing socialist facade, but all of this was closely tied to Zionism and settler colonialism in setting up this outpost, which effectively served US and Western interests very well, because if you look at the establishment of Israel, it came just after the Second World War, and it came in the context of the rise of Arab nationalism. And it, from the outset, even though it did allow later, you know, Arabs who were living in the state of Israel to become members, it still discriminated against them in various ways, didn't take up the issues, didn't represent the interests, would always side with Israeli employers and the state and so on. And has been a close partner, as it were, in the oppression and exploitation of Palestinians ever since, and remains so.
And this relationship of U.S. labor, the AFL-CIO, to supporting, continue to support Histadrut in their silence on the genocide, where does that come from?
I think it's clear that for decades, it wasn't always the case, but the AFL-CIO, prior to the two federations coming together, or after, I should say, has tended, its leadership has tended to be closely allied to the U.S. government, particularly the Democratic Party. It's kind of similar to the relationship that COSATU has with the ANC, and almost unconditional support for the ANC in this country, and I suppose the same for the Democratic Party in your country. And the Democratic Party has, in many ways, in terms of international and foreign policy, hasn't been much different to the, you know, the Republicans. If we just look at even during the Obama years, the Clinton years, etc., the amount of death and destruction that they brought upon many countries of the world, particularly in the Middle East, Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, and of course, supporting Israel, Palestine, and also, you know, the sanctions against Iran and its impact. The Democratic Party is strongly in support of it, the U.S. imperial role. It has represented imperialist, U.S. imperialist interests globally, just as well, if not better, than the Republican Party. And this is where the AFL-CIO has committed itself to. It is in full support. I don't know, as a South African, I don't have any record of the AFL-CIO posing strong opposition to any of the U.S. Imperialist roles. It's a bombardment of country, the killing of millions of people all over the world. Even during the period of the Vietnam War, I'm not aware of that.
That was Martin Jansen, a leader of the Palestine Solidarity Campaign in Cape Town, South Africa.
اسمي محمد انا فلسطيني لجنوب افريقيا اغرد ولها اغني اسمي محمد انا فلسطيني لجنوب افريقيا اغرد ولها اغني
Peace. government and people of South Africa for their support and solidarity with the Palestinian people in Gaza. Mohammed Al-Bassiouni, refugee camps, Gaza.
That was a Palestinian youth, Mohammed Al-Bassiouni, singing Shosholoza. This is Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm Paulina Vasiliev. Claire Daly is an Irish politician and former member of the European Parliament who was vocal on the plight of the Palestinian people long before the events of October 7th triggered Israel's most recent campaign in Gaza. Speaking on the Politics JOE YouTube channel, she shared her views on the news that the ICC issued arrest warrants for Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant.
It's only the start. The idea that there's only two people criminally responsible is definitely not the case. This needs to go all the way to the tops of the US administration and to the European Union elites who have enabled and ensured that this genocide has continued. It couldn't have happened without them. It wouldn't have even started without them, to be honest. And unless it goes there, well then, you know, the ICC has a huge credibility problem, which it had anyway. It sort of slightly rehabilitated itself. But the fact that the ICC, which is, you know, different than the ICJ, has taken this decision shows you how even they cannot stand over what's gone on there. But it must be deepened and it must be continued more.
When you were an MEP, you were very outspoken about the onslaught of Palestine.
I've been involved in politics for 40 years, but I have never seen anything like what is being unleashed in Gaza in full public view while the world watches it unfold. 10 days of relentless airstrikes, 1 in 1,000 people murdered by the Israeli government in a week, open declarations of siege, 24 hours of fuel, electricity and water left, collective punishment on innocent people, all illegal, all war crimes. And when the EU should have been arguing for a ceasefire, for the upholding of international law, for the protection of civilians, Ursula von der Leyen touches down in Tel Aviv to photo op the preparation of a genocide and says Europe stands with Israel now and in the days to come. How dare she? She has no authority in foreign affairs matter. She does not speak for me. She does not speak for Ireland and she does not speak for the citizens of Europe. We stand for peace. We stand for justice for the people of Palestine and for the upholding of international law. It's long past the time that this woman exited the stage. It's time for her to go and for the International Criminal Court
So the debate is closed.
Do you feel vindicated in any way by the decision now? Or
it was my job to use that platform to highlight what was going on. Mm-hmm. I think I did it well because people from Palestine and Lebanon and all over the world have been in contact and all over Ireland and Europe about how they were so glad that their voice and their opinion, which is not mentioned or articulated in the European mainstream at all, even though it's the views of the majority of people in Europe and probably in the US as well, but they don't often hear it in those centres of power. So it was an amazing opportunity to use it. And I'm very glad I did, but I'm very sorry that I had to, because, you know, humanity's future is up for grabs here. It's quite clear the West has decided that Israel is the harbinger of bonfiring international law and heralding in a world where might is right all over again.
Mm-hmm. You, even before this last year of the most recent genocide, as you say, you were in Brussels banging the drum, is probably not the right way to describe it, but you have been vocal on Palestine in Brussels for years now. How did it feel to be, I suppose, coming against a brick wall almost, that you're trying to spread awareness and spread, and I mean, you only need to look at social media to see how much reception by the wider public you've gotten for your stance on this. But how did it feel to be within that space and not kind of see the reciprocity of your view?
Well, I suppose, you know, politics is a bubble. It's becoming increasingly a bubble in Ireland, where there's a disconnect from those in power with the people on the ground. But in Brussels, multiply that by 100. They're in a complete bubble of self-vindication, where they are called, they answer the tune of corporate interests, be it the military industrial complex, big pharma, big agri. That's who they answer to. And they obviously tell them that they're doing a great job. And within that, in terms of foreign policy, you did have a lot of Zionists in the parliament. But generally speaking, there was a huge reception across the board from the staff in the parliament. There was been incredible displays of solidarity from the staff. I mean, you know, they work in an institution. I didn't fully believe ever the EU mantra that they are a force for democracy and good and human rights for all that. You only need to look at what they do in their own countries to know that that's not true. But they peddle themselves on that. But a lot of the staff working there believe that the European Union did represent democracy and values and rule of law. And then when they saw direct complicity and green lighting of the genocide, they were horror struck. They were literally traumatized. And we had an incredible meeting, which they tried to get cancelled, with Francesca Albanese, the UN Special Rapporteur on Palestine, which was packed to the gills with hundreds of staff across the institutions. And there was a lot of bullying. A lot of staff of Palestinian origin lost, you know, one man nearly lost 100 of his family there, and he worked in the institutions. Can you imagine working for an organization and then hearing its leaders basically goading and continuing on that genocide? So you do it because you know you represent what's real and that's a bubble. And they are the past. Like, this is, Israel is finished after this. They have nowhere else to go. And it may not seem like that because, you know, the EU and the US have their backs at the moment. But I firmly believe that this is this generation's Vietnam. Things will never be the same after this. And a whole layer of young people and people who are older who never paid attention to this issue are not going to let it go until there is justice for Palestine and this issue is dealt with. It's absolutely tragic that it's happening at such a terrible cost and that still it continues. But it is the harbinger of a big change as well. So you have a job to do, you have a responsibility, and anywhere I got elected, I never saw it as an end in itself. You know, people say, oh, vote for me and I'll do this. That's nonsense. I would say, vote for me and I will use the platform to shine a light on issues that other people are afraid to go to because of the media or whatever. You know, a lot of people in politics, they spend their lives trying to get elected, and then when they get elected, they just want to stay there. So they don't want to offend anyone, they don't want to do anything, they walk down the middle of the road. Not interested in that. We had a job to do. We were able to use the platform to voice the real opinion of the majority of decent Europeans, Americans and people all over the world. Because we look at things in a really Atlanticist way here in Ireland. Our media is really Western focused, but the majority of the world's population lives in countries who don't think like that, who have a different view. We never hear that reflected. And it doesn't mean that anyone is right and anyone is wrong, but dialogue and an exchange of views and treating people with respect, honour and difference and all of that is the only way forward. But unfortunately, the administration in the US and in the EU now is being hijacked by the military industrial complex, which Michael D said in a recent talk is the most dangerous organization on the planet.
Mm-hmm. How do you think the complicity that you were talking about, the complicity of Ireland, European Union, just the West in general, how do you think it will be remembered now that it seems that there's kind of a ball rolling in justice for the Palestinian people? But also in the immediate term, what do you think the consequences for the West will be if there's any justice to be seen for the Palestinians?
Yeah, I think in the short term, things are going to be difficult. I genuinely believe that it wouldn't have mattered which lunatic won the US elections, and that the result for the rest of the world wasn't going to be great. And certainly for Palestine, it wasn't going to be great regardless. But I do think that the American people are off their knees now and are pursuing this issue. I think in Europe as well, we've seen huge displays of solidarity. They're not going to go away. And I do think that that will only grow and accelerate. I mean, in Ireland, we've had this horrible game played by our government. I mean, I often have people, you know, in Europe say to me, oh, the Irish are great, you know, you're brilliant. And I go, well, the Irish people are great and they're certainly totally on the side of Palestine. But our government hasn't been great. I mean, can you imagine? Like, here we are, a country that was occupied, where we have an affinity historically.
It is
occupied. A country occupied, and that's the thing, who have an affinity with the global south, But very much in the global north camp, we're uniquely placed to play that role. And if we had played that role, it would be a beacon everywhere else. Instead, we were coattailing. Even Spain and Belgium and Slovenia were better than Ireland. I mean, we should have been pushing for action. I mean, think about it. In 1982, Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, arch pro-Israelis, imposed an arms embargo on Israel. And Micheál Martin can't call for that in a European context or can't champion that. What have we come to? Green governments across Europe arming a genocide when Thatcher and Reagan imposed an arms embargo for something which was terrible, but far less than this. It shows how much the world has gone in a really dangerous direction. So I think that fallout is definitely something that we need to look at and will play itself out as we move forward. But there's no way around it. Like the movement that is on the streets has to be toughened up. The BDS, the whole isolation of Israel, in the way in which ordinary people did it with South Africa, because it wasn't governments. I mean, they talk about the Dunn strike here. During the Dunn strike, of course, you know, the government of Ireland and all these new fans weren't on the side of the Dunn strikers who had to lead it themselves. But that always happens. But it was ordinary people then. It will be ordinary people now, because if it isn't, humanity is lost and we can all pack our bags, because the world is over and international law is over. And we can't have a world like that. And I think there's so many groups, lawyers organising, doctors organising, actors organising, midwives organising. The solidarity is bottom up. We need to, you know, spread that to BDS and serious action and blocking of Israel. And it will work.
That was Claire Daly, Irish politician and former member of European Parliament, speaking on the Politics JOE YouTube channel.
In 1948, the natives were expelled from the land of their ancestors, their homes and city shelled, from the traitors in Transjordan to clandestine British demand, by the settlers' Zionist army that rampaged across the land. Oh Palestine, oh Palestine, we hear your desperate plea that once again across the land your people can be free. Oh Palestine, oh Palestine, your people live in fear. We demand
That was Seth Staten Watkins, O Palestine, O Palestine. You're listening to Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm your host, Paulina Vasiliev. Next, we have an update on the situation in Haiti. Bloc Report's J.R. Valray spoke to Pierre Labossière, an organizer and co-founder of the Haiti Action Committee, about the recent removal of the transitional government of Haiti's prime minister.
Pierre, there's been so little media attention. A lot of attention has been going on to prop up Barbecue, who we've talked about on this show, is a prop of imperialism, basically. Recently, there was a transitional prime minister that was part of the transitional government that the core group consisting of the U.S., the Organization of American States, France, Canada, a lot of the colonial powers, but also Barbados, Jamaica, and others. They have basically taken power after firing this transitional prime minister. Can you give us an update as to how are the people on the ground in Haiti looking at what's going on with this U.S., or I should say imperialist-sponsored government falling apart?
Let me take a couple of steps back just to do a little recap on the history of the transitional government and how we got there. The transitional government, if we can say that, the whole idea of it, of this one particularly, is somewhat different than what has been imposed all along by the U.S., France, and Canada. There is some minor difference in the meddling that has been occurring in this process. That process started back in 2018 this particular transition government. When, at the time, Jovenel Moïse was imposed as the president of Haiti, and he had a prime minister that he had chosen, and they were presiding over a campaign of terror against the People's Movement, widespread corruption. It was during that time, in November 2018, when they organized the La Saline massacre, one of the most terrible massacres that took place in Haiti. It's been estimated that 77 people were reported as having been killed. However, the number of people being killed and disappeared is closer to 200, according to various reports. Some go higher still. So in any case, it was officials of the Jovenel Moïse government and his wife, they were named. Also the prime minister and other officials were named in this as having at least knowledge or being involved in one degree or another in this massacre. So what happened was during that time, Famila Valas, political organization, the party of President Aristide, put out a call to honest, competent people all over the country to come together to rescue the nation, to save the nation. Given the level of corruption that was taking place, the massive repression against the population. So they demanded in that call that the president, Jovenel Moïse, should resign. The prime minister should resign because they were incompetent in letting all kinds of things happen that were harmful to the population. And in that call, they called for all the organizations and political parties to come together around the table, select competent people to head a transitional government that would address the needs of the country, the needs of the population in terms of security, in terms of food production, in terms of schooling, because a lot of teachers were not getting paid. Monies that should have been going to the schools were going into the pocket of corrupt officials. Doctors were not being paid. Hospitals were closing down. And the needs of the population were not being addressed. Now, those monies are tax money that the people of Haiti were paying, and they were not getting the benefits of garbage being picked up, water, basic things that people are paying for and not getting. And so this was the call. And many organizations responded to that call. It took a while for people to come together, and finally they did in 2020, 2022. They came together agreeing with that hundreds of organizations, and they signed an accord called the Montana Accord. Now, the reason why I'm going to this history is to show that this was a purely Haitian initiative. Now, where it got messed up, it wasn't completely obstacle-free. There were many attempts to prevent it from happening. But where the intensification, the direct meddling of the U.S. became very prominent was in 2022 after they had all signed up. Then the U.S. started directly meddling in it to impose a leadership of its own choosing on this initiative. Unfortunately, you have some Uncle Tom Haitians who went along with it. And so Famila Valas pulled itself out of that broader coalition, but continued the mobilization, and the people continued the mobilization. The word for it was Salut Public, meaning a government of public safety. Sali means safety, public means public. It was short for government of public safety. So that's the origin of this. And this is what has led to this, what we are seeing today, this transition government. It's part of a process that unfortunately the U.S. hijacked. And you mentioned rightfully the core group, which is the group of nine different entities. There are five countries and four international organizations that are involved in this. And they carry out the daily policies of the occupation. Haiti is occupied, has been occupied for the past 20 years plus, ever since the coup d'etat against President Aristide. And this is a coup d'etat organized by the U.S., with France and Canada supporting it and others. But to carry out the daily routine of the coup d'etat, the daily directives given to those Uncle Tom Haitians, it's been the core group that is following the orders of the U.S. is directing the daily affairs of Haiti. And so this whole idea was to, is an initiative to regain Haitian sovereignty, to deal with the issues affecting the population in terms of safety, food production, healthcare, education, clean drinking water so that the people could benefit from that, and to have credible elections at the end of a process. The schedule was for a three-year period, during which time this caretaker government would take over and run the country and make conditions safe so that there would be free, fair, and credible elections where each person one vote, and it would be credible. So that's what was going on. But throughout the process, and particularly up to a year ago, when it came in front of CARICOM, was engaged to help broker the discussions. But what happened is the U.S. imposed a number of its own lackeys, its actors, in leadership roles, when they shouldn't have. That wasn't the idea at all of the Salut Public or the government of public safety. And so it's been an ongoing struggle by the people of Haiti to have the idea of the Salut Public, of a government of public safety, responsive to the needs of the population to be established and to rule the country. So now what we are seeing is the core group, as you rightfully mentioned, under orders of the U.S., is consistently sabotaging the process. And with it brought in CARICOM, who was supposed to be a fair and honest broker. But again, when you have the U.S. with all its might and power, not giving CARICOM any pass at all, because they should be holding up very strongly, just like the frontline states back in the days of the struggle against apartheid in South Africa. They should be holding pretty strong, a stronger line, but they are going along with what, unfortunately, with what the U.S. wants.
Now that the prime minister has been removed, and now that Mia Motley, who is seen on the world stage as, or has been seen as, a progressive, has actually moved into position along with the president of Guyana to do the bidding of imperialism. What are your thoughts on what's going to happen next now that the prime minister has been removed?
Well, the prime minister that's been removed, he was former President Bill Clinton's protege and puppet. Protege is a nice word to say puppet. He has a long history of that. He's also, according to various reports, he's been very connected with the PHTK party, very corrupt party of Michel Martelly and Laurent Lamothe, the former prime minister under Martelly, who was an imposed president, imposed by none other than Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, who was on her way to the Middle East during the Arab Spring, but made a detour to Haiti to ensure that the number five candidate in the polling in the elections of 2011 or 2010, who shouldn't have been at all, that was Michel Martelly, and she bumped him up to number two, and he was imposed on the Haitian people as the president. And this is something that the head of the Electoral Council has actually recently, a couple of years ago, asked the nation to forgive him because he had no choice. He had to go along with the fraud. He admitted that that's what it was. So the guy who was the prime minister, again this time, and that's why I was talking about the U.S. meddling, they imposed this guy on the new transition government. And again, Uncle Tom Haitians, people went along with it. But by this time now, we've had a change in terms of it's a nine-member presidential council, and everybody has a turn among the seven voting members. They have a turn to be the coordinator. So the Famila Valas person representative in that council, presidential council, Leslie Voltaire, who's an architect, it was his turn to be the coordinator. And he rightfully worked actively with a lot of the members to get this guy out as prime minister, because his name is Gary Coney, and he was totally incompetent, ineffective. He was viewed by the population as being in cahoots with a lot of the death squads or gangs, as the corporate media calls them. Those gangs were actually established by the PHTK party, and it's part of their strategy so that they have a campaign of terror against the population, so that whenever there is election coming again in Haiti taking place, that these gangs would be in control of all the voting centers and the voting labs like they did last time, and do ballot stuffing, coerce people. They don't even have to do that anyway. This is just for show, because the U.S. handpicks whoever they want to win, the U.S., France, and Canada, and the U.N. who organizes elections. They handpick. However, now what's been going on has been a sigh of relief by the population, because they hated that Prime Minister Garry Conille. Nobody wanted him. He proved himself to be quite incompetent, arrogant, and very contentious. And people associated him with Martelly and Lamotte and the PHTK party, and people wanted him out.
Now that Trump has taken power, he has taken a huge anti-immigrant stance. And one of the immigrant communities that he loves to target is the Haitian community. Can you talk a little bit about how Haitians are feeling about Trump coming into power, as well as can you talk about the relationship that imperialism in Haiti has on people leaving the island in droves?
Yes. So all of that campaign of terror I was describing earlier has made living conditions in Haiti hellish for the people in Haiti, in the sense of you have women are being gang raped systematically. And when you're seeing elderly women being gang raped, it's torture, basically. That's what it is that's being used. It's a weapon of war. It's a weapon of terror. When you have little babies and their mothers being killed, burned alive, it's to strike terror in the minds of the population. When you're having men and women whose houses are being burned, houses they've spent 20 years, as one man described it, to build, are being burned and they lose everything. These are already poor people. It takes them 20, 25 years to build a little, you know, more or less of, to put in a better words, a couple of rooms of a shack, really. So this is something to drive terror in that population. And you have the propaganda out there that these guys are revolutionaries. Well, as one of the women said, and the men said also, he said, do I look like an oligarch? They talk to the outside world and say, this is a revolution against the oligarchy. We are not oligarchs. So in terms of Trump, Trump is a Republican. He's saying this. But we've seen the same things from the Democrats. We've seen, for example, when the comments are well known about Joe Biden, President Joe Biden, when he was a senator, he said whether Haiti sinks to the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean or rises 300 feet, nobody would care. I'm paraphrasing this. He apologized for it later on, but however, his policies towards Haitian refugees has been shown clearly. Well, Trump is blunt in saying it, but the policies that they are imposing on the Haitian people by imposing leaders that the Haitian people do not want, corrupt people, they are not leaders, they are corrupt people, mafia-type people who they are imposing on the Haitian people, creating hellish conditions in Haiti. And so people in Haiti are very clear that we are dealing with imperialism. Sometimes it takes the form of people who are hypocritical, smile in your face and stab you in the back. Others will tell you to your face that, hey, I'm going to kill you. And they tell you straight up, and you know. So Haitians are very wise to this. And we don't get fooled easily. We know that we were born out of struggle as a nation, and the only way we'll continue to survive and thrive is by struggling again as a people. But we cannot do it alone. We ask for international solidarity. They are using lies so that people don't believe, so that people are confused. We are trying to tell people, don't believe the lies, join us. People can look at the Haiti Action Committee website, www.haitisolidarity.net. People can also assist us as we are assisting brothers and sisters in Haiti who are facing those hellish conditions. It's Haiti Emergency Relief Fund, www.haitiemergencyrelief.org. And we can put pressure on our representatives so that there is a change in U.S. foreign policy. That needs to be exposed. Haiti doesn't need any kind of the charity. It's not charity. It's solidarity. The U.S. is not coming at Haiti by itself. it's organizing with other imperialist nations in the form of the core group, 9 member nations. It goes to the UN to enlist others. You mentioned CARICOM earlier. Unfortunately, many of the people in CARICOM, it's not the same CARICOM we had years ago. It's very different now. And many of them are playing the game of the imperialists against their sisters and brothers. So the more of us become aware and join in the struggle, the sooner the Haitian people will achieve the liberation of Haiti.
You were just listening to the voice of Pierre Labossière, one of the co-founders and organizers with Haiti Action Committee. You can get more information at HaitiSolidarity.net and HaitiEmergencyReliefFund.org.
That was Pierre Labossière, co-founder of the Haiti Action Committee, speaking to J.R. Valray of Block Report Radio.
Here comes the sun, little darling. Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right. It's all right. Here comes the sun, little darling. Here comes the sun, I say, it's all right. Little darling, it feels like years since you've been here. Here comes the sun, little darling. Here comes the sun, I say.
That was Nina Simone, Here Comes the Sun. This is Pacifica's Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. I'm Polina Vasiliev. The residents of East Palestine have run out of health care and are trapped in contaminated homes in the polluted town. Chris Albright, a member of Laborers International Union of North America, LIUNA, and a resident of East Palestine, went to the AFL-CIO in Washington, D.C. to meet with its president, Liz Shuler, to get her support for the institution of the Stafford Act by President Biden. This bill would provide the residents with health care and funds to move out of their contaminated homes. Shuler has ignored Albright and other trade unionists. In Washington, D.C., union bureaucrats told them that she was not in and threatened to call the police.
That's who we are in this country. We're the backbone of this country. We made them strong.
We're in front of LIUNA, Laborers International Union, and one of the members, Chris Albright, is a pipeline worker, East Palestine, and he has lost his health insurance because he was sick because of the cause. So this union, Chris, you're a member of it, and you lost your job, and as a result, you've lost your health care?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, in this country, if you don't work, you don't get health care, and due to the train derailment, I've been unable to work for in past over a year and a half now. And due to that, I've lost my health care. And that right there is my union, LIUNA. I'm a member of LIUNA. And
you love being a pipe worker. You were making good money.
I loved it. That was a great job.
So you love being a pipe worker. You did a great job. And you know, you like being a union member in LIUNA.
Absolutely. I mean, as far as doing the pipe work, I mean, that was just going out and working with my hands. That was a great thing I loved doing. I was a furniture worker for 21 years, but doing that, going out, actually earning my money, and speaking of making my money, you know, I've always got more money working for union than I did not working for union. So unions work. You know, it's definitely a great benefit to have is being a part of a union. And now, you know, not being able to work and everything, I'm hoping that my union brothers and sisters will stand up and help me make this right.
And you would like it if your union, LIUNA, called on President Biden or President Trump, either one, to institute the Stafford Act?
Absolutely. If we can get the Stafford Act invoked in East Palestine, you know, give us our health care for the rest of our lives, that would be tremendous. So, yeah, I'm definitely hoping that, you know, the union will stand up and help to make that happen.
And you also were next to the AFL-CIO here, and you wrote to Liz Shuler and tried to get her to take a stand on this issue? And
Yeah, I did. I wrote to her a while ago, and I've yet to hear anything back. This is the people that are supposed to be, you know, helping us and uniting us, and to have no response is... It's pathetic. It should have never happened like that. I should at least have the, they should at least have the decency to at least get back to somebody.
So you didn't even hear back from her?
Not a word. Nothing.
And this is, we're coming on to November, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. What is it like for your family, your workers? You're in a community that's been contaminated, and you're facing another, it's over a year since this, coming on 2 years since this incident. And it seems like it's pain and suffering and a nightmare.
It definitely is. And like you just said, with the holidays coming up and everything, I mean, we struggle to get through our monthly bills and everything every month, let alone to provide, you know, meals for Thanksgiving and you know, presents for Christmas. You know, we never know what we're going to do or how everything's going to turn out. So it's a very stressful time on top of everything else we deal with. There's a lot of added stress on it that, you know, is not our fault. We didn't cause this. We didn't want this. We didn't ask for this. And we still have to deal with it.
And you're going to go in the building and ask to see Liz Schuler or one of her representatives?
Absolutely. Hey, we're here. Let's make it happen.
We have tried and tried with no avail to get a hold of our National Federation of Labor President, Liz Schuler. She's not gotten back with us. We want her to help the working people that have been affected by this in East Palestine, Ohio, to push the legislatures in D.C., the president, to enact the Stafford Act. Liz Schuler, where are you? We're here.
Yes, it's not just the people of East Palestine, Ohio. It's absolutely all of the railroad workers, regardless of where they live, et cetera, the toxins that they've been exposed to, and of course all the communities, the farmland, the cities that have been affected due to the railroad derailments. But not only that, the reality is harm to one is harm to all, is our belief as far as a union. And so, AFL-CIO, we know you are a part of us, and we know you're proud of the work we're doing. Justice for East Palestine residents and workers are proud to be doing the work we're doing today.
I understand. I can't walk.
Why? Because these people have lost their health care. That's why.
I can't walk to your job and just ask to speak to you.
Well, he wrote to her. He's contacted her.
Sir, only thing I can tell you, you don't have a scheduled appointment. I cannot let you upstairs. I don't even know if she's here today. I don't think it happened today.
We belong to the Federation of Labor. We're members.
Today is Friday, and most people are gone. You're talking about 2 o'clock. There's nobody, he just told you there's nobody in the president's office.
Please leave, or I'll call the police and have him removed. It's up to you. The choice is yours.
We weren't there to create hostility. They're the ones that created the animosity and the hostility. We came here peacefully. Here we are in the United States of America again. Once again, we came here peacefully today to speak to her, or at least speak to her representative. Oh, we can't do that either. And their stories just were so, you know, off-centered because, oh, well, it's 2 o'clock on a Friday. I mean, you know, who do they think we are, you know? Yeah. Yeah, just check. That's all we ask. But no, you know, it's like, you know, we're the enemy.
Didn't want to take the time to hear anything we had, anything at all to say. And just get out. Get out. Get out. It's Friday. Get out. You can't talk to her. Get out.
That was a report on the ongoing struggle of residents of East Palestine. And that concludes today's edition of Capitalism, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and affiliates who contribute to the production of this show. Today's program was produced by the Capitalism, Race, and Democracy Collective, with contributions from Steve Zeltzer and J.R. Valray. You can find this and all previous episodes at our website, capitalismraceanddemocracy.org. Make sure you click the subscribe button. Follow us on X, formerly Twitter, at PacificaCRD. I've been your host, Polina Vasiliev. Thanks for listening.